Órale pues, Raza, welcome to Chicano Highlights. I'm your host, Beto, the Beto Man, and we have a very special guest today.
David Encina.
How you doing, David?
I'm doing fine, brother. How are you?
Good, good. Tell me a little bit about your parents and where they're from.
Oh, my parents, they're from Texas. My mom was born in Eagle Pass, Texas in 1925, and my father, the same year, he was born in San Antonio, Texas.
¿Y cómo se llaman?
My father se llamaba Brígido. Mm-hmm. Brígido Encina, and my mother, Carmela, and she still lives. She's 85 years old. She lives with my brother in Apple Valley right now.
All right. And what did they do for a living?
Well, my dad was pretty much a laborer, but if anything, you could say he used to work on auto body. He used to paint cars, and that was mostly what he was doing most of his life. That's how I remember him. I remember as a little boy, taking me to body shops, and I'd go into the spray booth with him, and he would be painting cars, and I'd be in there with no mask, no nothing. I'm just in there, but it was good memories because I got to hang out with my dad.
That's good. So you grew up where?
I grew up in downtown LA, right in the corner, the intersection of the 110 and the 10 freeways, right in downtown LA. I grew up on 18th Street.
All right. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one brother and one sister. My sister, she passed away in 2001.
Okay.
My brother's
still. What are their names?
My brother's name is Brígido Jr., although he doesn't like to be called Brígido. His whole life, he kind of like, that was kind of a strange name. So I've always called him Jr. because he's been Jr., even though he's 66 years old.
Wow.
And my sister's name, Elvira. But we used to call her La Borrada because she used to have these beautiful green eyes. And, people would take a double take and look at her, and they would kind of like, their vision would be blurred because she was so pretty.
Mm-hmm. So where did you grow up?
I grew up in L.A., right in the middle of all of the pandilleros and everything. 18th Street, Clanton, White Fence, Cypress Park, all of those guys hanging out. Yeah.
Wow. So did you see a lot of action? Were you involved in any of the gangs or anything like that?
I personally was not involved, but yeah, I saw a lot of stuff happening. Even in my own neighborhood, there was gang fights in the corner and stuff. Mm-hmm. And there was, cholos waiting for me at the bus stop when I got off to school. I went to school at Berendo Junior High School. And they would be hanging out there trying to take my lunch money.
Orale. And how did you like school?
I did well in school. Actually, I did. And I did like school. I wasn't involved in too many things. In junior high school, I played in the marching band. I played trumpet because, I like to play a lot of music. I play guitar and still play the trumpet here and there. I play bass guitar. And so I didn't get too involved in too many things in high school. I was pretty much just wanting to get through it, and hang out with my friends.
Mm-hmm. So you never got involved in any bands or anything like that?
Not in high school, no.
No?
Not in high school.
Okay.
But in elementary school, I was the first student body president.
Orale.
Yeah.
All right.
That was really cool. Right? Norwood Street School. That's right in downtown LA also.
All right. And so after high school, what year did you graduate?
I graduated in 1978.
Okay, where'd you go from there?
I went to trade tech for a couple of years, and I was going to pursue a printing career. But then my cousin, who was working for the post office at the time, he told me that they were taking applications. So I filled out a card, took a test, and about a year I was there. So, it's been 31 years now for me in the post office.
Wow. So, but you didn't like school? I mean, you just decided to drop out or it didn't actually appeal to you? ¿Qué pasó?
No, it didn't really appeal to me too much. And the money was, the post office put some money in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
I went from $3 an hour to almost 11.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 19 years old at the time, it was 1980. So, vámonos, I had to go. And where the money was.
All right. So tell me about the post office.
Well, I've been working there. Like I said, I started as a clerk. I worked graveyard for 10 years, and I worked at the counter for about 5 years after that. And then I got into management back in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And I've kind of worked my way all the way up now. So I'm a station manager now, and have a charge of two offices, and I'm the supervisor's manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I met my lovely wife Iris at the post office too, back in Pasadena. I started in Pasadena, and I now work in Ontario.
Mm-hmm. All right. And did you ever encounter any racism? What about racism?
In the post office?
Yeah, in the post office or anywhere in your life.
In my life, yeah. Oh, yeah. Growing up, I remember one time I was coming home with a friend of mine. We were walking. Down from downtown LA. We were walking home, and I'll never forget. There were these gabachos standing in a parking lot. They're could have been like in their early 20s. And they saw us walking through and they just started doing, you know, hey, orale, says that kind of stuff, right? And they go, Chicano power, like that. And I was, we were just walking by. And so I told my friend, I said, just keep walking, you know. His name was Gerardo. Mm-hmm. And we were walking by and I said, yeah, that's right. And he goes, no, that's wrong, man. You know, that's wrong. And they started, you know, starting hurling insults at us. But, you know, we would have been no match for them. Mm-hmm. You know, they were much bigger than us. And we just kept walking.
Yeah, they were looking for a fight.
Yeah. Yeah. And one time, this African-American guy pulled a knife on me. I was coming out of the liquor store with a friend of mine, and he wanted our money. Mm-hmm. And he pulled a knife. And it wasn't even a switchblade. He even fumbled it trying to open it up. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have any money because there was a truth. I didn't have any money. And we just kept walking.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. A lot of stuff that happens to people, ¿verdad?
Yeah.
Every single day.
Yeah.
So, you met your wife, and she is?
She's Korean. Mm-hmm. She's Korean, yeah. I met her in the post. We were working in the post office on the same shift back in the mid-80s. And, yeah, you know, it's it wasn't love at first sight, you mm-hmm. know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I saw her, and I said, man, she's gorgeous. Mm-hmm. And but it wasn't until about maybe a couple years later when I looked at her, and then, I don't know, man, I guess Cupid shot an arrow through my heart.
There you go.
I said, you know what, I got to get to know her better. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, the pursuit began.
Orale.
Yeah.
Orale.
Yeah.
And you've been married now how long?
22 years.
22 years.
Yeah.
All right. How many kids do you have?
We have three. We have a daughter, Beverly. She's a civil engineer. Mm-hmm. And we have a daughter, Emily, and she lives in San Francisco. She's working in digital media. And our son, Solomon, he graduated from Cal Baptist University. And all three of my children are college graduates. I'm very proud to say their old man was not a college graduate, but you know, I push them. They got to get their education.
Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah.
All right. And tell me about living in L.A. What did you like or what did you not like?
You know, living in L.A., I can say honestly, Beto, that there's nothing I didn't like. You know, I live now in the suburbs about 35 miles away. And I love going into L.A. I love driving the streets. I love driving. I'll even go into L.A. just to drive my own neighborhoods, to drive by my old schools, to drive the freeways and stuff, just to see where I used to hang out. Because I actually do miss it, to be honest with you. I actually miss it. I love L.A., man. I really love L.A.
Did you ever get involved in any of the lowrider scene or anything like that?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, in 1977, I bought, with my parents' help, I bought a 1974 Chevy Monte Carlo. It was red with a white Landau top, man. I put 520s, spoke tires on it, and I didn't really know how to make it a lowrider, so I was told that you take it east to L.A. and some guys will melt your coils for you. So that's what I did. And they melted my coils all the way down to where the white wall starts, you know? Mm-hmm. And I put some spacers in the front to lift it up a little bit more. So, man, I was styling in that thing, man. But, yay, I was a big man in campus. That was the car was only like 4 years old, man, and you know, people knew me for my ride. You know, and the girls wanted rides and stuff, you know how that goes. And a couple of friends of mine that we had cars, we started a car club called Paradise Car Club back then. And I understand that a car club still exists today called Paradise. And I got to think that we were the founding members of it.
All right. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Tell me now, I heard that you wrote a book.
Yeah.
What's the title of the book?
The title is called Whosoever, and the subtitle is called Finding Christ in the Book of Proverbs.
All right. Why the Book of Proverbs?
In the Bible, the Book of Proverbs is a book that is just filled with wisdom and advice for anybody growing up, and actually even people who just need advice. It gives very simple, basic life advice.
All right. Tell me about your parents. Were they very Catholic?
They were Catholic, yeah, but mostly by culture, not by really commitment. So consequently, I never really went to church. I was never really made to go to church. I didn't do the catechism. I didn't do the Sunday school. I didn't do none. I didn't do my first Holy Communion or nothing like that. So I really didn't, I really was not really deep into the Catholic
Okay, part. But did you have any spirituality in you?
I always believed that there was God. Mm-hmm. Was growing up as a kid, I always believed that there was a God because my mom always, you know, spoke about God. And, you know, and I do remember many times that, you know, she used to make my dad get up and take her to church on Sunday mornings. And I used to like to go too when I would wake up on Sunday mornings as a little kid. And I remember my dad always leaving halfway through the service, and I always wanted to go out with him, you know, because he would go and buy, you know, barritas and, you know, panecito and everything to take it home on Sunday mornings. And sometimes he would stop at this place and buy carnitas and chicharrones and homemade tortillas, and we would eat in the car. And that was always so much fun.
All right. Now tell me about your book. How big is it?
It's a little over 300 pages.
How did it come about?
Well, what I did was, one year when my son Solomon was about 12 years old, we went through the Bible in 1 year. And when the year was finished, and I asked him, well, what do you want to do? Let's do this again. And, you know, being that age, you know, he was kind of spreading his wings himself, and he didn't really take too much to the idea. So what I did was, is that during my own devotions, I would write something to him related to a verse. And then God put it on my heart to do the book of Proverbs verse by verse. So he actually kept every page that I wrote him, and it turned out to be three-ring binders, real about 3 inches thick. And through a series of events, that, you know, God opened a lot of doors, and to him be the glory, and it got published.
All right, tell me about those events. What happened?
Well, I had a couple of people that we shared the binders with, and they really told me strongly that they really felt that it should be published. But I didn't know anything about it getting published. I didn't know anything about being published. So I prayed a lot about it. And I said, God, if you want this published, you're going to put somebody in my life that's going to help me. It's going to open up the doors. That's exactly what he did. This one lady by the name of Millie McGee was with one of my wife's customers at the work, because my wife works at the post office. And she said that she was a published author and that she was looking for people to mentor. So I got introduced to her, and she introduced me to Tate Publishing, and one door after the other opened up, and mm-hmm. that's how it came about.
Well, what's so special about this company?
Well, Tate, I believe, is...
Tate, like in T-A-P-E?
No, I'm sorry, Tate, T-A-T-E.
Okay.
Yeah, Tate Publishing. They took a chance on me, you know. They wanted me to send them a couple of chapters, and they read it, they liked it. They sent me back, said, send us some more, and they were willing to take the chance because they invest a lot of time and a lot of effort and a lot of finances just to get this work published themselves. So they saw something in it. So I believe that God moved them to help this happen.
All right. So looking at, let's say, a section of your book, let's say one of the Proverbs, out of all of them, which one did you like the most?
It's really hard to say which one I really like the most, but the ones that I really can think of that really have helped me in my life are the ones that have given me advice on how to act as a man, how to be the father, how to be the dad, how to do those things that would make people better people just by knowing me.
Okay, well, tell me something like that you might have read. I mean, paraphrase. You can't read the whole thing to me, but paraphrase, you know, something within the book.
Well, there's a verse in there that speaks about authority, okay, and how a foolish person mocks authority, but how a wise person respects it. I mean, to paraphrase it,
mm-hmm.
And I related a story of one time when I was growing up in L.A. And I remember a friend of mine and I, we jaywalked over this four-lane boulevard, Washington Boulevard in L.A., and we actually stopped traffic. And when we were walking through an empty lot heading back to our home, a policeman on a motorcycle was driving up and down, and he stopped, and he waited for us. And when we got there, he started to let us have it as to why did we jaywalk the way we did, and how dangerous that was, and how for our own good, he needed to let us know, because how did we know those people that were going to stop for us? So he gave us tickets, and we went to court. And I remember going there and being really afraid that I was going to be sent to juvie, you know, because some of my primos and everything, they were, you know, all pandilleros, you know, they spent time in juvie and stuff. And I was always afraid of that. And I really thought I was going to go. And there were some guys in the neighborhood telling me, hey, you're on your way to juvie, man. You're on your way to juvie. And I was scared, man. But No, the judge, you know, let me off, you know, let us off. And I really relearned that day to respect authority, and that it's there for a reason. On the contrary, though, my friend, he didn't respect it. He laughed at it. And he got into a lot of gang activity afterwards, and he wound up getting shot in a park, you know, over just being who he was. And that was a very tragic price he paid for that. Mm-hmm. But it's done a lot of things like that for me.
How old were you when this incident happened?
I was 11 years old.
All right.
Yeah, I was 11 years old.
All right, tell me another one.
Well, I remember one time, still growing up in L.A., and it's related to the same thing about how the Bible tells you how to choose your friends and how you're known by the company that you keep. And I remember one time hanging out in front of my porch with a bunch of my friends over the summer, and this one guy came by in a car. And I didn't know him too well. He was a couple years older than me. And he drove up, and he wanted everybody to go joyriding with him. So everybody piled in. And I didn't go. Something told me, don't go. Don't go. And they were all yelling at me. They were like, come on, come on, come on, you know, chicken, you know. And they started, you know, hurling insults at me and throwing me the finger and everything like that, you know. Pero I didn't care. For some reason, I just didn't care. Well, I remember the next day, everybody was kind of quiet. They were all kind of subdued. So I asked them, you know, what's going on? You know, let's go play ball or whatever. And, you know, they go, no, hombre, no vas a creer que nos pasó. I go, what? And they go, man, we were in jail last night. I go, what happened? It turns out that the car was stolen. Mm-hmm. And so they got pulled over. The guy went to jail. They took all the kids to the police station. They called their parents, and the parents went to pick them up. And when I think about how my parents would have reacted, you know, my dad and my mom, my godparents who lived upstairs from me, how that would have been not only shameful, but worrisome for them. I'm so glad that I listened to my heart, but I really believe that it was God that was keeping me from that.
All right. How about another one?
Well, I also recall growing up that, living in L.A., I recall just driving the streets of L.A., especially at nighttime, and after, you know, partying with friends and then seeing, you know, some of the houses and stuff and it becoming so much a part of me. And I remembering what the Bible says about not to forget where you came from. You know, the book of Proverbs says, you know, not to be proud and not to be think that you are more than what you are. And when I recall where I grew up, where I came from, and it really makes me feel so much more humble that I can't forget where I came from. So I think that one of the things that I learned from writing this book was that.
Mm-hmm. When you gave all of these little by little to your son, how did he interpret all of it?
He loved it, actually. And he actually looked forward to it. I remember there was a couple of times I tried to do it every single day. And I remember once when I missed about a week for one reason or another. I think I had my work schedule change or something. I couldn't get to it. So in the evening, he asked me, you know, Dad, what's going on? I haven't gotten my papers. So I think it really moved him at that point. I think he really did like it. And he knows when he sees this book now, he's 22. When he sees this book now, he knows that it was meant originally as a gift to him.
Mm-hmm. So this is really, the entire book is really based on stories of your life.
A lot of it is, but there's also poetry, and there's also short stories, fictional characters that I've made up, and there's a little bit of commentary. And it's not preachy in any way. It's an easy read. It's not, you know, I'm not a Bible scholar. I'm not a theologian. I'm just a guy who loves God and just wants to share. And if it means bringing up some of the things from my life that I'm not too proud of, then that's okay. I'll do that if it'll help somebody. And if it'll help anybody learn or be curious about reading the Bible more, then it's done its job too.
Okay. So then tell me, how did you get involved? I mean, if your parents weren't very Catholic and, you know, what drew you into the church?
My wife, she was very involved in the church growing up in the Christian church and Protestant church. And she left her faith for a while. And in the early 90s, she discovered it again. And I always had a belief in God. There was nothing in my mind or in my heart that ever denied that God existed. But I realized that I could know him better, and he knows me personally. So I then began listening to studies and studying myself and reading the Bible more and wanting to learn more, and then realizing that I needed a Savior.
So where did you go to church?
I was going to church with my wife and my mother-in-law, who was with us still before she passed away, to a Korean church on Western Boulevard in Koreatown in L.A. And what I would do was that I would go into the church, and it was just all Korean. It was in Korean, but I would use a little headphone set, and there would be an elder who would translate the sermon into English as it was being preached. And then he would meet with me afterwards and ask me, what did I get out of it? What did I learn? What do I think about God? And after a while, I began growing in my faith on my own. And then I talked to my wife and I said, you know, it's time for us to branch out and find a church that's in English, one that we can serve in and really grow in. So we found a church in Glendale that we used to go to. It was the First Congregational Church of Glendale. And we went there. And we bought our home in Rancho Cucamonga in 1993. So obviously we weren't going to be driving back to Glendale for church. So we found a First Presbyterian Church of Upland and been serving there ever since.
All right. So when you say serving, what does that mean?
Well, it could really mean a lot of things to a lot of people, to be honest with you. I serve, I'm what's called a clerk of session, which means the session is what's called the elders, the board of elders. And I am the one who records all of the minutes and keeps the meeting flowing and assisting the moderator to make sure that all the elders are staying on topic and then the meetings are moving in a very smooth fashion. And that's my current position in the church right now. I'm actually an ordained elder of the church, mm-hmm. of the First Presbyterian Church.
That's very good. How would you see kids receiving this book?
I think that kids could, it's not really meant as a kid's book, because what I've had to do was some of the things that I wrote were actually geared toward my son, who was 11 or 12 at the time. So I had to actually go through the book again, page by page, all the pages that I wrote, and I had to change it and make it so that a man in his 40s, a man in his 30s, a woman in her 20s, and a woman in her 50s could read the book and get something out of it. So it's not meant for a child. It was originally, in its purest form, was meant for him. But I changed it around so that everybody could read it. It applies to everybody.
All right. And what else can you tell me about the book?
Well, it's out there for, you know, it's got my life in it. It's got up until the time that I wrote it. And it's got, for me, I believe that it's what God set me out to do, and it's going to preach his message out through this book and make people curious. So I just hope, and I truly believe, that God will put it in the hands of the people that that want to read it, and it will be into those people's hands. And that's how I believe it. It's never been my desire or anything to stand on the street corner and, you know, hand books out, or, you know, tell people, no, you got to get this book, you got to get this book. No, it's God's book, and he's going to do whatever he wants with it. You know, I'm very blessed to work for the post office. You know, as the saying goes, it's been very good to me, and it really has been. And so my eggs are not in this basket, but it's just something that I believe that God put for me to do, that he needed it done, and so I answered his call, and I did it.
All right. What message would you give kids today, whether to get an education, stay in school, go to church? What message would you give them?
My message to them would be is that it is extremely important to get your education. I was very, very lucky, and I think I'm one of the last generation that's going to be able to get a job like I did in the post office and be able to stay in it very long, as many years as I have. But I also know, and I push my children for this, that the education is the most important thing they can do for themselves. They need to walk the straight and narrow and stay away from anything that would distract them. But more than anything else, and what I've learned from reading the Bible and from writing this book, is just do the right thing. Do the right thing. There is a God, and he wants to give you the right thing. And all you got to do is search for him, and he can be found.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for coming in.
Thank you, brother. I really appreciate
it. Where could they get this book?
Well, I have a website, and it's www.whosoeverthebook.com. One long word, whosoeverthebook.com. Or they can write to me at P.O. Box 4414, Ontario, California, 91761. And on the website, it gives you the first three chapters, and it gives you some more background about myself and how you can order the book.
Really? The whole first three chapters?
The whole first three chapters, yeah. And it has endorsements, and it also has... You can actually still get it on... You can even get it, rather, on Amazon.com, or you can Google my name, or on YouTube my name, and you'll see some of the places where I've spoken, and you can find me on Facebook also.
All right. Well, once again, thank you.
Thank you, brother.
All right, Raza, that's going to do it for us. I want to thank you for tuning in. This has been the Beto Man. You've been listening to Chicano Highlights, and that's going to do it for us. Hasta la próxima, Raza. Ahí te guacho.